Greetings, Mr. and Mrs. Middle America and all the ships at sea. This is Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie tonight, and then tomorrow night I'll be back again on Coast to Coast for a guest that many people have been asking for. Conversations have arisen about biblical forgeries, which invariably results in a conversation about Bart Ehrman, who'll come back tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. He has a new book out about heaven and hell. We'll talk about that and also some of the other issues in the news. But there is no bigger issue than what remains topic A, what's happening with COVID-19. I mean, there's some scary stuff on the website, right? I mean, coasttocoastam.com is, it's always fun. You got to see that trio of UFOs filmed by a dash cam in South Korea, or go see that really cool piece about that mystery creature sparking a panic in India, or how just a waterfall just up and disappeared in Ecuador. I mean, it's always fun stuff that makes you go, what's that? What's going on? But nothing is topping the possibilities of what could come out of COVID-19. I know there are some who think this is a bad cold. This will not amount to anything, that in just a matter of weeks, they'll be able to sit back and say, I told you so. God, I hope they're right. I really do. But from the very beginning, and the last time I was on Coast to Coast AM on Open Lines, which we'll do later on tonight, I was taking it pretty hard from several callers. I was, people commented afterward that a lot of callers were coming out swinging on my belief that we should take this seriously until we don't have to. And then we can look back and everybody can take a breath. But I think everything I've said so far has borne out to be true. And I think this is why it's a perfect night to have on Dr. John A. McDougall, who's got an unusual, I say unusual, he's got a legit, straight-up medical approach to our outlook on what this coronavirus could be, how bad it could get, how long it will take. But he also has some good news on some of the things that may be within our control, some of the things that we can do, some of the things that we can take that might lower the morbidity rate for not just ourselves and the people that we love, but perhaps the whole country. And we'll get to that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. If you hook up with Dr. John A. McDougall on our coasttocoastam.com website, he'll take you to his website, which is all about nutrition and health. But if you keep on clicking through till you get to the coronavirus video, it's a lecture. It's about an hour and 15 minutes long, but it's very informative, both from a historical perspective and from a medical one. And I just can't think of anybody more perfect to have on tonight than Dr. McDougall. So how are you tonight, John?
Well, good. I think we should dispense with the idea that this is a hoax.
Yeah.
Or flu.
Yep.
People need to listen to the news. I'm not a virologist. I'm not an epidemiologist. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to convey to your listeners total isolation, because Mary and I met in an operating room 40 years ago. We were both surgical techs, so we know sterile technique. And
sure.
I'm going to explain to the listeners about 46 years where I have treated comorbid factors like obesity, diabetes, rheumatoid arthritis, the drugs that follow, such as biologics and cancer chemotherapy. I mean, that I'm an expert in. So,
yeah.
We should go on. And,
yeah, no. Your bona fides are solid with me. Let me show you a little bit of where I think we need to start. I think, and I appreciate your, kind of taking a position right away to say that let's dispense with that. I thought I had sufficiently, but if not, I'm good. I know that it'll come up again in open lines, and there's a lot of people who want to believe that this is a much ado about nothing. But I thought what I was really, I found your argument so convincing in the videos. You went over some of the histories of some of these past flus that I wanted to start there before we move forward into a more therapeutic approach. I really do feel like that you did such great work in your slides and in your presentation that I really wanted to emphasize some things that I think a lot of people kind of either intentionally ignore or they want to feel is just not that important. And I would argue things like that a flu usually lasts about 2 years before it gets under control. Those are some of the numbers you were showing up on the website. You're kind of looking at it in like 24 month cycles. Explain to the extent that that's true, why that is.
Well, let's refer to the Spanish flu. The Spanish flu, which occurred in 1919, had an initial wave that was followed by 1920 that had 10 times the death rate. So typically I think of a cold as something that lasts for a week and is mild. Typically I think of a flu as something that lasts 6 weeks and starts out as the SARS-CoV-2 virus. In other words, the COVID disease. But the COVID disease is rampant.
I don't know that I understand that. Explain what a COVID disease is. And you said like COVID-2. So explain what a COVID disease is, because we're used to hearing COVID-19, but what does that really mean?
Okay, that's a good to start with that definition. These are SARS virus, serious respiratory viruses. Number one occurred about 14 years ago, and the world panicked, and SARS CoV-2 is the one we're dealing with now. In other words, it's the second coronavirus. Now, I don't know where the name COVID-19 comes from, except for the fact that it may have appeared in the year 2019. It started in November, of course, in Wuhan, China. First, let's begin how it did start.
Yeah.
And how the flus typically start. What you have is you have an abnormal situation. You have a whole stockyard of animals, cows, pigs, chicken, and they mix together, several million animals. And each of those animals has several million viruses. So you got a mixture that is destined to cause aberrant viruses. And so that's how the H1N1 or H1N1 bird flu developed. That's how the swine flu developed. Obviously, the names are associated with the animals. And COVID, and this is one thing I want to point out, Mr. Plummett, is we talk about the wet markets and something China did bad. Well, if you go to the grocery store, you walk down the aisle of Safeway or Times or Whole Foods, you're walking down a wet market. I mean, what do you think's behind the counter? I've been talking about and writing about for 40 years the fact that the animal foods are infected with multiple viruses that cause cancer and also cause suppression in the immune system. So, people should get little solace in eating a well-done steak or a medium-rare steak. I mean, they're eating a whole load for viruses. This goes back to a discussion I did in my May 2003 newsletter where, and it didn't get any attention, but I pointed out that cow's milk and derivatives of cow's milk are all infected in this country. In fact, 90% of the herds, you can look it up in the U.S. government, 90% of the herds back since 1969 were infected with viruses known as bovine immunodeficiency virus, which means to me it's just like human immunodeficiency virus. As a matter of fact, back 30, 40 years ago, the two viruses, bovine and human IV, were so anatomically and immunologically so indistinguishable that they couldn't tell the difference. So it wasn't until about 1993 that UC Berkeley was able to do studies that showed there is a difference between the bovine immunosuppressive virus and the human HIV. Right. And they developed tests, and they found, I'm going to jump to leukemia now, they found bovine immunodeficiency virus is similar. They just went out and picked 260 people off the streets in Berkeley, California, took blood, found that 76% of them had been infected with bovine leukemia viruses, which are present in cow's mouth, beef. You know, so this is old news. And the thing I'd like to point out right at the present time is those of you who take content in the fact, which I doubt, that this is going to run its course in 3, 6, 12 months. Hey, you know, we have a setup for another Ebola. We're set up for another SARS-CoV-3. We're set up for epidemics. And I have to point out that it's not just the animal farming, the fact that we have 7 billion people on this planet, and we have wide transportation.
Right.
And let's talk about that last year was the highest temperatures on planet Earth. So you combine these virus-growing factors, and you just sit there and wait a couple of months. If you're not moved to take action now, it's going to be 6 months.
All right,
3 months.
I'm going to get you to pause there because I think this is really interesting, but I want to unpack some of that as we go along, because I want to check with you to see whether previous conversations on the show with experts are things that you jibe with too. That we have unique situations in China, in Africa, and in some places where people are more inclined to live on top of or with animals. And when you get the combination of, say, like pigs and birds and people all in a very compressed space, that you increase the odds of these animal diseases jumping into the human population. Is that how you would describe it?
That's exactly what happens. And the thing is, it's not new news.
Right. That's not new. And so this isn't new in that way. But in this case, what about it is a novel virus? Why is this novel? Why is this something we've never seen before?
Okay, it's something we've never been exposed to, so we're immunologically incompetent. It's the same thing happens with each flu epidemic, is you have antibodies in your system, and as a result, you have influenza vaccines made against those antibodies or against the viruses occurred last year, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And so they make a flu vaccine against the virus that they think is going to occur.
Yeah.
A novel virus, in other words, one that we haven't been exposed to, occurs. And so the flu vaccines are useless. Thank goodness there's not something called antigenic drift with SARS-CoV-2. In other words, we grow an epidemic of, you know, whole populations of this virus. And fortunately, once the immune system is exposed to it, it makes antibodies just like it does to smallpox, to measles, mumps, et cetera. And it doesn't have to make a new virus because it's not a new antibody because it's not a new virus occurring, you know, during the next attack. Next few months.
All right. So that's
it. It's a novel. It's new. And the thing I want to point out, Mr. Bummett, is that it was just released. That I stand within a couple of feet and talk to you, and I'm breathing virus all over you.
Right.
It's 10 times as deadly as the flu. We didn't know it was, what was happening until it was too late. Now, here we have governors saying, I discovered yesterday that you spread the virus when you're not sick. Well, we've known that since November.
Right.
And this whole thing, of course, is dominated by politics. But you're going to get to the point where you're going to ask me, well, am I happy that this occurred?
No, I won't get to that point. I'm not going to ask you that. I'm still trying to understand exactly what's going on. So again, I'm kind of unpacking some of the things you've already said, and I know that you're like so far ahead of all of us that this will probably be kind of a boring conversation for you, because you'll have to kind of slow down and hit some things a little bit differently. And by the way, it's just Ian. You don't have to do Doctor or Mister, and I generally don't. I'm not that much into honorifics either. But so let me just say, I think you're. Approach is perfect. And I loved the video that you had on the website, because I thought you really explained it. I think what you helped me understand better, and I helped be able to explain it to somebody else who I happen to be on the phone with today, is that this isn't the existence of this and the predictions of this, how bad it could get. You know, even now talking about 250,000 deaths, that's maybe kind of a conservative figure, but I'd love to ask your opinion on that. How high, in your worst case scenario, does COVID-19 infection in the world go?
Well, it's my guess. That virus is in charge, but I hear figures as high as in this country, we can expect 2.2 million deaths. Now, if we had, let's just say we have 1,000 a day like we do in the U.S., we should be intolerant of that if we had 4 or 5 aircraft crashing every day in the U.S., we'd have a national campaign to stop, you know, the problem.
Right.
So it's going to be, well, let's go to what you wanted to talk about, which is the Spanish epidemic of 1920. Total, 50 million people died. It took 2 years. Remember, the next year was 10 times as lethal. But if you take today's population, you just compare it to 1919, then the death toll was 200 million people from that Spanish flu. And we're going to get around to us talking about the Spanish flu and how there was one unique country called Denmark where the citizens changed their diet and they virtually had no deaths from the Spanish flu compared to Germany and England, where, you know, all of Europe and the rest of the world, where people died by the hundreds of millions.
But, yeah, which is fascinating.
The potential is you're never going to go back. It's never going to be a new world. I'm living a new life. I look outside. There are no cars. Right. And I'm really happy that people can see the skies in China, that when you go to Venice, you see there are fish in the canals. People can see there's a future. And I'm really scared, Ian, that. And the last time I was on the show, and I didn't get a very positive response, I was on the show talking about something that is really important that feeds totally into the conversation, underlines something I really want to say. And that is, I have 7 grandchildren. They have a limited future. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says that if we don't make serious changes in the next 6 to 10 years, then it's all over. The problem is we're going to be sitting at 6 to 10 years with 20 feet of water covering Florida, and you and I, the rest of people out there, are going to say, whoa, we better start talking about what we do is destroying the planet, and we have to completely shut down the economy, stop the global warming. Now, here we're in a situation where COVID came in fewer than a few days, certainly less than 3 months, we have a world where we're entirely isolated. The planet is clearing up environmentally, and we wouldn't have done that in except for the fact we were faced with our own mortality immediately rather than die in a slow death. So I'm so excited about talking to you about
this. I am too.
But there's an underlying motive I have, which is COVID-19 has opened our eyes so that you and I don't have a conversation in 2 years or 5 years or 6 years where I said, gee, I wish you to bring up the possibility that we can save Mother Earth.
Right.
And more, and we can change. Look at everybody's different. And now they're eating the diet, or they're starting to eat a diet that eliminates comorbid factors. This is what I want to talk to you about.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that therapeutic piece. In fact, hang on for that, because I don't want to, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so I don't want to get into something that big and then just run out of time again. But as we get ready to go to the bottom of the hour, I want to read a couple of headlines. I think if you hadn't heard, I was actually on Drudge Report. Henry Kissinger has said, the pandemic will alter the world order. New York City stores are preparing for civil unrest. I talked to a fellow, a friend of mine, an academic in Massachusetts, and this person told me that at her university, they are already making arrangements to use the arena space for either local hospital spillover or potential parking, indoor parking of morgue trucks, because that's how badly Massachusetts is being hit. And in Delaware, the police are authorized to pull over people with out-of-state plates. I mean, there are things that are happening even as we speak, which go directly to what you just said. So we don't even have to think this could be happening. And that's where I want to bring Dr. John A. McDougall back into the conversation again in just a minute. So let's prepare for the worst possible case, where then we can only be disappointed. And then we can talk about rebuilding the economy, too, at the same time. We'll get to all of that coming up. And then your calls on the way for Dr. McDougall on Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie, this is Ian Punnett. All right, so we'll pick up this conversation that we started, and it's just been great with Dr. John McDougall. The questions are everywhere. What's life going to be like? What are we looking at? And what can we do about it? We'll get to the therapeutic piece for fighting COVID-19, the things you can do to narrow the odds that you will succumb to this virus next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So, you know, families everywhere, I know two who have been affected by COVID-19. In fact, patient zero near where I live at on the just right by the campus of Kansas State University. Patient zero here was my grading partner, a guy I'm teaching with, and was on a trip to London. He got it. His sister has it. His family got it. One of the kids who was on the trip, who were students, one of them got it. I mean, as Dr. John McDougall was saying, you know, this is an exceptionally difficult virus. It's novel. And one of those things that we hear a lot is how, for example, one of the people who died yesterday was a California mother who died one day after getting the diagnosis. So I'll ask you, Dr. McDougall, why is this so unlike other flus where people may take weeks and weeks and weeks? Why does this one move so fast through the body? Do we know?
Yeah, no, we don't know. But the facts are you're well, you know, Chris Cuomo is an excellent example, and you have a pretty good week, and then you get worse, and then you go to the hospital and you see my two children who happen to be doctors in Portland, Oregon here. They're on the first line. They get admitted, and then immediately, I mean, within a day, within hours, they become overwhelmed with respiratory distress. They end up being ventilated. You've heard about the overrun of hospitals and ICU and ventilators. I want to tell you, though, that you should not go to the hospital until you're ready to have the doctors administer the last rites. So it's best you stay home and till the very end. The chance of being...
Why go in at all if it's the very end? What would be the point of going in if it's the very end?
To dispose of the body in semis that are refrigerator trucks. You don't want to die at home. If you get put on a respirator, the chance of getting off the respirator is fewer than 20%. And of that 20%, 10% should not have been on the respirator. Hmm. And so, you know, it's just a lethal disease. And the lethality we want to get to right now, it's in old people, and I'm elderly, and those with comorbid problems. You know, what I'd like to say, Ian, is that I've been taking care of comorbid problems for the last 46 years.
Right.
I look at people around me, and they're overweight, which is a comorbid factor. they're diabetic. In fact, 14% of the U.S. population is, frankly, type 2 diabetic, and half are pre-diabetic. Half have heart disease. Furthermore, those who have cancer and in autoimmune diseases are put on drugs that suppress their immune system. Now, I would encourage all cancer patients, except for those who have leukemia, lymphoma, and childhood cancers, to immediately call their doctor on Monday and say, look, doc, is this cancer chemotherapy for breast cancer, colon cancer, prostate cancer, lung cancer, doing me more good than harm? And the doctor will tell you, well, you know, we have nothing else. Well, doc, is it suppressing my immune system? And of course it is. People on chemotherapy get viral infections at an increased rate because their immune system is suppressed. Likewise, autoimmune diseases, they go on these biologics, and the goal of biologics is to suppress their immune systems. Now, what I want to point out, Ian, is that I have been treating with success, and I mean success, and I've published two papers, one in the Journal of Nutrition, one in MS and Related Diseases, which show that that you can cure rheumatoid arthritis with 80% results. You can cure autoimmune diseases. You can cure type 2 diabetes. And this is reported in the scientific literature. Type 2 diabetes is due to diet alone and obesity, which is the result of diet. And fully 100% of people who lose weight, and I may point out, sustained weight loss is a starch-based diet. It's not the Atkins diet. So just by losing weight, you cure type 2 diabetes. Just by changing your diet, you reverse heart disease. And, you know, the February 2015 American Cancer Society guidelines say that fundamental to cancer therapy should be the diet that I recommend. And no doctors recommend it. I can tell you right now that the cure of rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, et cetera, in my hands are as common as curing constipation. In other words, people get symptom relief in 4 to 7 days. And if you're not cured, and I really mean it, and I will put up the data for the cure of heart disease, the cure of diabetes, and the cure of autoimmune diseases, to any medical professionals listening or any scientists listening, it's well published in my scientific data, my website. So why not get rid of these diseases? Why not avoid comorbid factors? The reason that people under the age of 65, all the way down to 13 years of age, die of comorbid factors, and it's not just the elderly, is because they're immunocompromised. And I have a cure. The cure is to eat a diet that people traditionally ate, and that's a starch-based diet. Let me give you some statistics. In China, during the H1N1 flu, compared to Toronto, where they eat the American diet, the death rate in Toronto 14 years ago was twice as high as in China. Let me give you a current example. Italy, northern Italy, has a death rate of about 8 times what it is. Now, I want you to focus on what they eat in northern Italy, which is a reflection of what they eat in Spain, which is a reflection of the Western diet, which we all eat in the U.S. And I want you to compare that to countries like South Korea, China, where people are still on a diet based on rice. They eat fruits and vegetables. They have dairy to a minimal extent. And if they have meat, well, not the modern Chinese. If they had meat more than once a day, I mean, it's rare. And this all changed in 1980. In 1980, the Journal of American Medical Association, back to 2013, the Journal of American Medical Association reported the results of Chinese. And they said before 1980, the Chinese people had fewer than 1% chance of adult type diabetes. And since 1980, 35 years, they developed a population where 12% have comorbid factor of type 2 diabetes, and a clear half of the Chinese population suffers from prediabetes. So, Ian, what I'm trying to say is look around you, and everybody, essentially all Americans, are overweight. They have high blood sugars. They're immunocompromised. In other words, don't start thinking you don't have comorbid factors. You are at high risk. Now, the nice thing is within, well, I run a 10-day program. I have data that extends over a year from Oregon Health and Science University. The good news is that when people hear this message, it's very simple. You eat beans and corn and rice, and you eat a few vegetables and fruits, and you give up things that are going to rot soon when your electricity goes off in your refrigerator. If you think you're going to fill your refrigerator with chicken, fish, beef, pork, cheese, and sit there during what's going on and expect to eat, you know, you're kidding yourself. Now, right. I have 100 pounds of food sitting in my storage room, and I'll be able to eat. In fact, Mary and I plan on eating for the next 2 months, and all we have to do is take the beans and dried right. corn and the rice, and I'll tell you, Ian, I eat like, you know, like human beings are supposed to eat. I just finished a rice and curry dish, and we had potatoes and corn. All that's missing is the yellow and brown, disgusting, tasteless, malodorous, disease-causing food that Americans have become accustomed to that they cannot eat unless they cover it with ketchup, steak sauce, or salt. So giving up is nothing. What you're gaining is the loss of comorbid diseases, a chance to not only survive COVID-19, but you become trim at a rate of 8 to 16 pounds a month. Your type 2 diabetes is corrected within, 7 days. You get off your cancer, chemotherapy, immune suppressant drugs. I mean, we're in a situation where there are no drugs,
right.
there are no prevention, there are no vaccinations. And those of you who think that modern medicine is going to come up with a cure for these problems, you're the same ones that dream that Martians are going to come to Earth or some other alien, and they're going to give humanity not only a clean atmosphere, but they're going to kill all the coronies, and they're going to take and solve your eating problems. Now,
well, that'd
you
be
know,
nice.
We started this conversation by saying you and I are realistic people, so... Since you have nothing, let's talk about what you really do have and how you can save your family and the community. And it costs you 20% less than you have, and you save the planet. And boy, oh boy, you get me off on this, and I'm just going to.
I bet.
You've got to eat potatoes, rice, corn, beans, and it transfers into oatmeal. Really good food.
Now, I'm going to refer people to your website, which they can link up to through coasttocoastam.com. Only because I know Tom Danheiser was telling me about this earlier, and I know many other people are doing it. How do you feel about apple cider vinegar, by the way? A lot of people are looking at this as being kind of a – you would or wouldn't?
I would, but if it tastes – if it's tolerable. But I wouldn't drink it because it had any miraculous properties. I've done a casual review of taking supplements, which would be vitamins – or yeah. natural medicinal remedies. And I've looked at vitamin C. I've looked at all kinds of different plant-based derivatives. That if you take this, it's going to heighten your immune system. You know, I wish I was convinced. I've been a doctor for over half a century. I have pushed more drugs than any drug pusher. And quite honestly, the ones that are offered from the scientists and pharmaceutical companies, they're good when it comes to acute problems. They are a complete failure when it comes to chronic diseases. People will say, well, you know, it's a failure in the type of isolated drugs we make, and that you ought to look to plant parts to take and change your health. Well, I think you're naive.
Okay.
Fortunately, you waste very little money. You take very little risk. So go ahead. But
no. Yeah, I totally accept that. But let me – so let me go to something that I saw in your videotape, which I thought was very interesting, is that you are not anti-vaccination except when it comes to the influenza vaccines. And I'm assuming that you're referencing back to what you talked about earlier in the hour where the vaccines that they give us for the flu are all based on flus that have already happened, and therefore you believe are less effective or meaningless for fighting flus going forward.
Yeah, you've got it exactly right. Previous or present vaccinations made against flus are against flus that have had genetic drift, and they have changed, or they are different flu viruses that we have no experience with. And so we make a vaccine guessing that it's going to be the same as previous ones, and they're wrong every time. And you know they're wrong because when you walk into the supermarket, or there's an alternative message here. When you walk into the supermarket, what does Safeway say? If you take the flu shot, we'll give you 10% off your groceries. I'm suspicious. I can't call in a prescription without getting a lecture on ordering a flu shot for my patients. There's an alternative motive for selling shots that don't work. And Ian, every year they come out in the medical literature and they say it didn't work this year, but you ought to take it anyways because there's evidence that it was worth your while. Well, where's the evidence? There's a complete review I did, all the studies done on giving flu vaccines and the results. A lot of money to be made, but I want you to know that all my children and grandchildren are fully immunized against DPTs, polio. I'm not going to throw away the wash water or the baby with the wash water. I'm a doctor who's seen diphtheria, tetanus, polio. I've been around a long time. People get them, they die from them, and I'm going to give my family every advantage they have. So, you know, I know there are anti-vaccination people out there, and I feel the same way about useless vaccines. But, hey, everything's okay now, but it might not be next week. My kids may be living in trenches. They may be getting shot at. They may be getting infected with smallpox. So I got to prepare my family for next week and the week after and so on. And I don't want to send them out in the world with an unprepared immune system.
All right. Now, so I think that's interesting because I have never had much success with flu vaccines. So I don't get the shot every year. And I had 1 year I had the vaccine. I think twice in my life I've gotten a vaccine. Each time I've gotten sick. And I thought, enough of that. Every other time I was fine. So, I mean, I'm not saying if they didn't offer a vaccine for this one, if it was deemed effective, that I wouldn't be interested. But tell us that what you think, and I only have a minute, so you have to give me a minute answer on this, is if they came to you and said, we have a vaccine now for COVID-19, everybody's got to take it so we can end it, would you take it?
Absolutely, because there's no antigenic drift. So they would give me a denuded virus that my immune system could respond to. Next year when it comes back, it's all ready to go, knock it out. Absolutely. And then I would be on the front lines with already compromised, already infected people. I'd be out there. You know, I am 73 years old. I have a license. I'm waiting for the phone call that says, Dr. John McDougal, you're licensed. You know how to put an IV in somebody's arm and a tube down somebody's trachea. We want you on the front lines. Again, I have my whole family on the front lines.
It could happen. It could happen. All right. So we're coming up on the top of the hour. Then after, we'll give you the numbers. You can join the conversation next for Dr. John McDougal. He says this in the United States, we could lose 2.2 million. It's a heck of a place to start a conversation on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.